Welcome to Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, the thought-provoking series on how to set, align, and implement priorities. Here's the host of our show, management consultant, speaker, educator, and president of Business Alignment Strategies, Pat Lynch.
Welcome. I am Pat Lynch. I have as my guest today Dr. Mike Masters. Although Mike has retired from his paying jobs, he wears many hats. Mike currently is a major in the California State Military Reserves, serving in the Medical Section Combat Stress Team. His other military experience includes service in the U.S. Army, and he is a Vietnam-era veteran. He also served as a state psychologist for the California National Guard for 1.5 years. In his civilian life, Dr. Masters has been a psychologist in private practice for over 25 years. Some of his related work includes serving on the faculty of the University of California, Irvine, California College of Medicine for over a decade. He also was a chief psychologist for UCI HealthNet, and he is the mental health officer for a federal disaster team. He's currently serving in that role as well. Mike has trained hundreds of psychiatrists and physicians in cognitive behavioral therapy in the treatment of depression. Finally, Mike is a deputy sheriff, level 3 reserve, for the Riverside, California County Sheriff's Department. Welcome to this call, Mike.
Thank you, Pat. Glad to be here.
Just for people who are listening, you know that in our series we've been talking about how to set priorities, align priorities, and implement them. And we've been talking with experts in those areas. Today, we're taking a little bit different tact, and we're taking advantage of Mike's role as a psychologist to delve into a little bit of the psychology behind setting and especially implementing priorities. So we're going to be talking a little bit to get some perspective into how we set priorities and especially why is it that we may not be able to keep them, and perhaps get some ideas on how we may do a better job of that. So, Mike, if you could please, when we set priorities, with all good intentions, what's going on in our minds, especially as we're trying to deal with competing priorities? Say we've got something going on at work and we've got something going on at home.
Well, if we might, Pat, I would like to basically, for the listeners that are saying to themselves, well, wait, you know, I don't even set priorities. Something really wrong with me. I'd like to just take one step back, because I've seen in my practice for nearly 30 years that there's a lot of us out there that really probably know we should but don't set priorities. So I'd like to just say a word to the folks that are saying, well, I don't do it. And I think that is a good place to start by saying, if you don't set priorities, then there's nothing really wrong with you. It's just that somehow you haven't gotten a habit or there's stuff going on that prevents you from doing so. And if you're not setting them, then you're living your priorities with what you do, and you can just say to yourself, well, my priorities are those things which I am doing. And we know from experience that if you do sit down and deliberately set priorities and get them squared away and aligned so that they make sense and then look for balance, then you're going to be more successful and feel a lot better about your life at any stage of the game. So sorry to back up, but I wanted to get to that one before we went forward with those that are already setting them and then running into some difficulties.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right, and I appreciate that because that I kind of overlooked that here. But you're right, and I think that for those who don't set priorities, things kind of happen, and perhaps that may add to a sense of being overwhelmed or feeling out of control. So I think that's a very important point, and I appreciate you making it.
Exactly, Pat. And so for those of the listeners that basically don't, then I think the plan is to say, okay, I can, if I do a little look back at my life, then my priorities have been what I've been doing, where I've been putting the bulk of my time and effort and energy. And if things aren't working out or you're not satisfied, then you might say, okay, I need to take some time and deliberately set priorities. And then those people will be caught up with what we're going to talk about for the rest of our time once they get, some priorities set. Now, remind me of what that question was that I deferred from.
The question is basically, let's start with where you just left off, which is talking about criteria that we might use. As people are, let's say we have someone who to this point has not consciously set priorities and decides after listening to you that, you know, this would be a good thing. I think one of the first questions might be, what are the criteria that I should use or might use in determining what my priority should be anyway?
Right. Well, that's a big one. But let me tackle it this way. I think that when you're really working on structuring priorities and getting them, you know, down and organizing them, what you want to look at really is what do I value? You know, do I value my accomplishment? Do I want to have that thing on my mantle? Do I want to have them? Do I value money? Do I value relationships? Do I value family? Do I value love? Do I value my golf handicap? And so what you're looking at really when you set priorities is what values and priorities really go hand in hand. So really our priorities come from our values. And what I think it's important for your listeners to think about is that there's often a disconnect between what we think we're supposed to be prioritizing and what we do. And often that comes back to, you know, that it's not really what we value. So a lot of people that I've worked with in the past, executives, will find that they're not as, you know, successful as they'd like to be. And often we'll find out that they're going full steam ahead in their career, doing what they think they need to be doing to get to that, you know, ultimate promotion, whatever that priority is to be vice president or whatever they want to be. And they're not working, things aren't working so well. And it turns out that really their values are more family, more relationship, and so the disconnect happens because they're doing what, you know, their career is asking them, but their values are in another area. So really, to get back to some of those other questions, is a lot of people struggle with accomplishing priorities and getting things, you know, sort of set in motion to get that to happen, because they're getting in their own way because they don't want it that way, or they're doing more of the work than their family or something like that. And so I guess for the listeners, if you're struggling with that, take a look and make sure that your values match your priorities. And if not, then you need to reset them, rethink them, and make some pretty hard choices about, well, am I going to make vice president, or is it more important for me to go to Johnny's ball game or Sally's brownie, you know, meeting or something like that?
And, you know, I think that's important because we do tend to move along. And I think for many people, the assumption is, or the expectation is, that we will continue to move up. And if that's the expectation, we may, you know, unconsciously or consciously think, well, this is what I need to do. And then, as you say, one day wake up and say, you know what, I'm really not happy.
Right. And, you know, you've opened up a big can of worms in terms of other things that I've seen with priorities and kind of the understood path and progress of a career. If we're going to talk about careers for a second, a lot of people end up in a track that is leading them to management or higher management or something like that. And I've worked with a lot of people over my time where they got miserable when their path took them out of, let's say, making sales calls, and they were a manager and they didn't get to go out and do it anymore, and they were miserable and they weren't good at managing people because they were great salespeople. And so, again, if you're on a track, make sure that it's what you value, and then if that's truly a priority and you really want to be in that, and you find satisfaction in that part of a career, great. But a lot of people end up going up the ladder and get miserable because they're not doing what they want to do. So, again, values, priorities, what you want to do, what you're good at, what you feel comfortable doing. And some people get very miserable when they get too far up the ladder and find that it's not for them, or they don't even want to know it because they finally got to this golden ring, and then now what am I going to do with it?
Right.
So it can get very complex.
Right. So what would you say, and I'm thinking kind of from my experience, certainly in what I've experienced when I was in the corporate world, when I was a university professor, I dealt with people all the time who were considering either new careers or, more likely, changing careers. And what I found is that very often they would feel so invested in their education. Let's say, you know, a person is a junior and in accounting, and suddenly decides that, you know, I really hate accounting, but I've only got one more year. If I change to something I really love, like biology, it's going to be two more years. So,
right.
You know, what advice might you have in terms of determining what's the priority and how does it fit with the values and how can we reconcile those?
Well, you know, I actually did some career counseling back at UCI early on. We didn't talk about it, and it's been some time, but I do it occasionally. And what I do remember from that and the statistics I think still hold is that I've seen a lot of people who are unhappy in a career path for a variety of reasons, but some of them were exactly that. Now, this is the path of least resistance. I had that many credits and went on into it when they really knew it didn't fit right. So I think that, you know, we think that roughly 80% of people are in their career and are doing it because they need to have a paycheck to survive, and only about 20% of us are blessed enough and, you know, picked correctly, I guess, picked wisely, something that we really feel like isn't work. And so I guess whatever your age is, whether you're, you know, 20, 50 or older, if you're going to be working for any number of years, to be miserable for 40 years as opposed to stepping back into another year or two more to get into a path that fits you better, your values and what you're good at, I think that's heads on a favorite. And people have to make up their own minds, of course, but you know, I've seen a lot of miserable people who would then end up in the right path 20, 30 years later and said, oh, boy, I sure wish I'd known this when I was younger. So, you know, I've seen that on several occasions.
Mm-hmm. So how would you advise someone who may be thinking about changing careers and is trying to, you know, get priorities straight? Because oftentimes, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing, people get to a point at which they say, you know what, even though I'm miserable in this job, you know, I've got a mortgage, my kids are in private school, you know, I'm pretty invested here, and no, this is going to be a big change.
It's a major change, and I guess there's two paths to that, and, you know, if the person has the wherewithal or the ability to, I would certainly suggest talking to a counselor or a therapist at some point to help make the decision, because we've basically got two paths here. One is to stay in the job that's sort of a drudgery, but you're kind of tied to by all those responsibilities, which, you know, many, many people are, and they're loath to dump the kids, you know, whatever, you know, take them out of soccer or take them out of private school or not have their college tuition paid for. And so they're basically, they say, look, I've got to stay with this. Well, there's always an end point, because if the kids are a certain age and you know, you've got to get them through college, then you can be doing something avocationally that is more who you are, part-time, building up skills, building up, you know, whatever training you might need if you were going to be a painter or a sculptor or whatever, a dancer or, you know, stand-up comic, to do that avocationally, not thinking about making money, but just having some more fun, something that feels less like work while you're keeping your job till you get the kids at a certain point or whatever else you need to get to the point where you can switch. The other way to look at it is if you're miserable, you know, your family knows it, it's affecting your relationships, it's affecting your, you know, everything about you. So what's the cost in terms of lots of different costs, not just money, of waiting? And, you know, do some brainstorming, and maybe if there's a spouse or a partner or some resources or someone you can borrow money from or something, to see if you can find a way to transition into that other, you know, area way sooner. And my number one advice, if people are going to do this, is that you go to even a community college. Almost every community college I know in California, and hopefully other states, has a one-credit course in basically career testing and counseling. And what you do there is you take three or four of the standardized tests, very cheap. It's probably, you know, $100, $200, to take the test. And then the instructor will help you to interpret them and then give you basically a mission, which is to take the results of those tests, filter them through your preferences, so that, say, the interest test says that you look like a minister. Well, you know, you might say, I'm not going to do that. I happen to be an atheist, so you're not going to do that. But then you filter them through your own preferences, and then you end up with a handful, two or three or four careers that are a good fit on each of the dimensions that they would test in this career testing class. And then you do some research. You do some reading. You interview some people that are doing it. Possibly you get volunteer work somewhere to kind of try on the field somehow. And even if you thought you were going to be a brain surgeon, obviously you can't volunteer there, but you could be a volunteer in a hospital and work your way towards working in an OR so that you felt the community there and had some more people to interview to find, okay, is this going to fit me? And what we know through research very clearly is people that do that and do it well end up much more likely to make a good choice, as opposed to making a choice just at random, I think I'll be that. So that really works well to do that testing.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And And I think something that probably most people don't know is a service of the community college system.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter how old you are, and you know, if you live in the nearby, it's very, very inexpensive. And even if you're not a high school graduate, you can still do it in most cases.
Okay. And in cost, I mean, a couple of $100 when you're talking about the quality of your life, you know,
right.
Talk about a great return on investment.
Exactly. And most of them have financial aid for people that truly are really struggling and don't even have a couple extra hundred.
Mm-hmm. So let's stay on this for just a moment. There are a couple aspects of this that kind of caught my attention as you were talking. One is that my observation is that many people now with the economic downturn, people who have lost their jobs, people who are on furlough, people who are afraid they will lose their jobs, are very reluctant to even think about doing something other than what they're doing, because they're so focused on really survival as opposed to looking ahead and planning and those kinds of things. And so I think too, people have certain beliefs about what is a job, and jobs. You know, what I love to do is not my job. That's what
right.
I do when I come home. So can you maybe speak to this, maybe the fears that people have, at a time when they might be thinking about planning to do something else, and how bringing their passion or the things that they really love to do might really play into a job that they get paid to do?
Right. Well, I mean, that's always a challenge, but I read about it, I talk to my colleagues, and there's no end to the people that have said, I was afraid, I started working on this, and you know what, it's the best thing I ever did. And it is a risk, and we're talking about risk-taking, and some people, it's not their cup of tea. But again, I think it's clear that if you can get into counseling, get some help with, how you might be able to get a little more, energy and a little more courage together to take some risks, reasonable risks, not unreasonable risks, because it's your life, you got to do what makes sense to you. But there's so many people that have thought that way and have been trapped, and so many people that have struggled and gotten out that, it's just one of those things that you've got to make this move on your own, but there's a lot of history of people that have made it. But back a little bit to that, you're looking at, if you're struggling a job and you're worried about a layoff and things like that, then of course you want to do the best you can to keep your job when you've got to put food on the table. But if you are working on also in your spare time instead of whatever it is that we do to waste time, whether it's watching game shows on TV or things where we're basically just entertaining ourselves, I think I've yet to meet anybody, either in my professional life or personal life, where we don't have a chunk of time that if we, again, prioritized and said, okay, well, I'm a salesperson, but I'd like to be a stand-up comic. Then, and if instead of doing whatever it is, it's kind of our time waster, that's sort of where we kick back and relax, and it doesn't mean you work 24/7, but that you look for an hour or two a day, a week, where you can read a little book, do a little practice in front of a friend, figure out where you get lessons for something like whatever it is, stand-up comic or something like that. And remember that it is your life, and you live it once. It's not a trauma, and it's what you got. And that's why therapy can be very powerful in helping to identify with somebody that's kind of stuck the way we're talking about it, or whatever, and has no priorities or hasn't living through them, that what is sticking you and getting you is caught. And what I can tell you probably is going to be true for almost 100% of our listeners is that you've got something going inside your head. We call it self-talk or internal dialogue, where you're talking yourself into or out of stuff that is not working for you. And that's where cognitive therapy comes in. So if I was going to recommend any one thing to all of our listeners, it would be that you find a book, find someone, a therapist or someone if you want to, either or both, and learn about cognitive therapy, because it's essentially how we talk to ourselves, because that determines our mood and our behavior. And I've yet to meet a person who doesn't need a little stiffen up on that, including me. So, everyone can benefit from that, and it's very widespread. It is the sort of the standard of care in the mental health industry right now worldwide, and it's easy to find people that can practice it, and there's also, hundreds of books that are very good at training people to do it on their own, which you can. Sometimes you need help with a therapist.
So, suppose that you have someone who is kind of gripped by fear, anxiety, because of his or her situation at work or pending, situation. you've provided some great first steps. Are there, you know, can you maybe give a couple of baby steps that people could take so that they could begin to pull them out? Because those things can be very debilitating, I think.
Yeah, well, stress, anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, these are things we find all the time, especially in times like this that are very tough economically with jobs that are lost or at risk of being lost. And I guess the baby step is to basically, in cognitive therapy, what we do is we listen in to what we're saying, because our mood is determined by what we say to ourselves. So if we wake up and we're saying, oh, no, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen next? These terrible, horrible things are going to happen. I'm going to be out of money. I'm going to be out of a job. And we focus on that, then that brings us down, and it scares us and we get anxiety, or it brings us down and we get sadness and depression. And cognitive therapy is not Pollyanna, oh, this is a wonderful earthquake that's crushing my house. It is, instead, it is saying reasonable things, which are, while it is true that things are not so great in my work right now and there has been a layoff, I still have a job today, and so I don't need to worry today. I'm going to go and do a good job today, and I'm going to have a smile on my face. And what happens is when people have this kind of self-talk that is more positive and less negative and fearful, then they actually appear that way. And we do know with good research that people that straighten out this self-talk do keep their jobs longer, because when we're kind of burdened by stress or anxiety or depression, we don't work as well. So it's very powerful to turn these things around, and you can do it a little bit at a time quickly. In a matter of days or weeks, you can make a definite change in your mood and your behavior by changing this self-talk that directs your path in life.
So moving that to the workplace, what would you advise managers to do when they have, you know, they have employees who are in this situation? And, you know, I imagine it would be something along the same lines of using the self-talk, but outward, if you will.
Exactly. And the best managers are just good coaches. You know, a good little league coach doesn't say to the kid, hey, you struck out, you're stupid, you're bad, you're terrible, you're awful. They say, hey, you took a nice swing at that ball, next time you'll get it. So good managers are very positive and upbeat and collegial and don't curse and pound and criticize and put people down. They basically just say, hey, that was a good effort. And then if they need to do some constructive criticism, they add it after, you know, let me tell you what you did right, how you did that right, or, you know, you've been here a long time. If it's real, say, you know, your job is not at risk right now. I'm kind of, you know, there was a layoff and a lot of people are worried about it, but, you know, for right now you're good. Whatever they can say that is positive without lying is a very good way to manage people and bring them upbeat. And, of course, a manager has to then also feel good about the company, the agency, whatever it is, and believe in this in order to say these things. So sometimes a manager's got to sit down and have a little talk with himself first. But in terms of looking at people that are having some problems, that are clearly stressed, you know, telling the truth and being as upbeat as reasonably possible by looking at what you can focus on, good that the person is doing or good that this company's got going on, like we've got some prospects or some new customers or whatever, or, you know, keep a stiff upper lip. The more we smile, the more, you know, we're going to sell today. Things like that are very helpful.
Okay. What would you say in a case, I think that people often find themselves, a situation in which people find themselves, and that is, you know, I'm torn between a work commitment and my kid's soccer game, you know, and my work is a priority, especially these days. I really need to keep my job. And my, you know, my kid's soccer game is important because they're kids one time and they're growing quickly.
Boy. What? Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yes.
You know, I knew a minister who was very fond of saying that he'd presided at hundreds of, you know, basically people passing on and dying, and he had never once heard anybody say they wished they'd done a better job or earned more money, but he had heard lots and lots of people say that they'd wished that they'd spent more time with their kids and their families and their spouses and had better relationships and done that. So, you know, that's something that I've kept in my practice for, you know, nearly 30 years is that when you think about priorities, you know, you can almost always, you know, keep a job when you think you might lose it. If you, you know, you don't have to go to every meeting, you can miss some. But you can't get more kids. And like you said, they're not going to be that age ever again. So I think the key thing is being realistic and asking yourself, again, getting back to self-talk, am I telling myself that if I'm late for this meeting or miss this meeting, that I will lose my job and will go hungry? Or is it that I don't want to risk missing that next promotion and getting that priority? And so if it's a difference between literally, you know, putting bread on the table and losing the house, then of course you have to do that. But there's lots of things that people are reluctant or loath to do because they don't want to be assertive. They're afraid if they even say, hey, look, Joe or Sally, whoever the boss is, I'd like to miss this meeting. It's an important family thing. You don't have to go into details. How would that sound? And sometimes asking, they'll say, not this one, and then you'll know. But being assertive and asking can often really help you to set a better priority and know whether it's truly risking bread and butter and a roof over your head.
Right. And I think that's important, too. I think that oftentimes we tend to have, we tend to blow things out of proportion. And we tend to, instead of asking, assuming the answer.
And we contest, and we don't think we're allowed to ask. Now, I used to work for somebody 40 some years ago that wanted me to do six different things at once and didn't mind it. I thought I really was supposed to do them, and then about once a month he'd fire me. This is when I was in college. I'd go home and I wouldn't come in the next day. He'd call me and yell at me and say, "Where?" And I told him he fired me. He'd say, "Get back in here." So, you know, there are bosses like that, but most people are more reasonable. So that if you do ask reasonable questions, you're not going to get fired or lose your place in the line for promotion. In fact, often you will get more respect because you had the gumption and the respect of the boss to say, "I'd like to check out something with you." And then they go, "Hey, this is someone who's, you know, got the confidence to do that and respects me enough to know that I'm not going to fire them or bite their head off."
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's turn for just a moment to this idea of, let's say we say these are my priorities, and let's say in a business setting, because there are people in business settings that are having to make really tough decisions in the face of really scarce resources and many cases unprecedented situations, and
right.
Say, okay, these are our priorities, yet we find that we're not acting on them. Can you, you know, why, what might be the things that are holding people back, and how might they overcome some of those obstacles, whatever they may be?
Well, I want to clarify something. If we're talking about a person's individual priorities in their job as opposed to what the boss is telling them, so if we focus on, let's say, my priorities as a worker bee in this company, and, you know, there's not a lot of resources and I got to make do with what I have, but if I'm not, you know, doing the things that I really have prioritized properly to accomplish goal A, then what I think normally is what's getting in the way is some kind of a fear normally, or some kind of a depressive thing where there's something that's going on where we're not quite willing to take the leap of doing it. So we might procrastinate, we might do, I used to teach, you know, time management, and we would find that people would do very easy to mark off things off of their list instead of doing the more important ones because they could mark them off the list. So, you know, there we teach people to, you know, break them up into little smaller bites and do those one at a time, and even do the ones that are the ones that we're loath to do but are important by setting that priority. And basically we're really saying, I don't want to do it because I don't like it. And so if important, then you have to roll over your dislike of something by the fact that it's a priority. And if you're not doing it, then you're either being stubborn or you're scared or something like that. Often we procrastinate because we're afraid of failure, so we're just, you know, and people that know with their past history, like me, I hate writing things, but I know by past history, the way I get myself nailed to the desk to write it is that I do it fine, I do it well, once I get started, it doesn't take that much time, I just don't like it. So when I need to do something, I basically nail myself to the chair and do that self-talk and say, you're not getting up till you do this. So that's the way to overcome some procrastination, you know, bred by fear of failure, is to say, well, have I really failed that bad at it? No, I haven't. I just don't want to do it again. So if we're afraid of failure, then you just push through and do the best you can.
Okay. And I think realizing, again, going back to self-talk, that the best you can do is good enough, really.
Well, and there you get to one of the, in cognitive therapy, one of the main barriers to healthy and balanced living is that we live by a set of ridiculous and irrational rules. And one of those is that we can be perfect. We can do everything. And that's just simply not true. So a lot of people spin their wheels, don't do things that are in their priority list or do them, you know, haphazardly because they're kind of ruled by this overarching belief that I can do everything. I can be perfect. And if I'm not doing everything, I'm not perfect, then I'm a failure. And so that's one of the best things that cognitive therapy does is it straightens that out and helps people to see that they may have been living by a ludicrous rule because no human's ever done one act perfectly since we walked upright or since the Garden of Eden, whichever you prefer, ever. So that tyranny of perfection and shoulds and musts is one of the things that really creates a lot of procrastination and people that don't have their life in balance and don't accomplish priorities.
Okay, so what would you say? Well, I was going to ask in the workplace, what if you have a group of people, you have priorities, and you're still not doing, you're not following those priorities, but it occurred to me that we're still coming back to the individual.
Right.
Okay.
Sometimes that's a group process thing, and then that involves whoever the leader has to try to figure out, you know, what each person piece of it. Sometimes you've got relationship issues where someone is sabotaging deliberately, and so that's a kind of a process, a group process thing, which I don't know that we can get into today.
Okay. No, that seems like a topic for another area.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any last things or any advice, anything that you haven't said that you think might be important to help people to kind of push through and establish their priorities and then really act on them?
Well, Pat, I guess that, you know, that if I could try to sum it up, it's that whether you do cognitive therapy or not, most people get out of balance. And a lot of people that have set priorities or don't set them, people that set them that aren't fulfilling them properly, are really out of balance. They're not really aware of what's an acceptable balance between success and failure, between perfection and not doing it right. And so they need to look at clarifying what is reasonable to expect of me in this instance, in this economy, in this situation, and then being able to feel good about, you know, hour by hour, minute by minute accomplishment so they don't get in this tyranny, which most people have, of just really dumping on themselves and criticizing themselves and creating fear. And I think that's what gets in the way for most people of having a balanced life, of setting priorities and making them. So cognitive therapy is the best path I've found to cure in that. But if you really just literally just talk to yourself and look for unreasonable statements and say, if you said it out loud, would you say that to a 5-year-old child about what they were doing? And most of the time they go, well, of course not. Well, why are you saying it to yourself? And you straighten out how you're talking to yourself, and you will be able to get more in balance and then set priorities and achieve them in a reasonable fashion without feeling like, oh, boy, I failed because I didn't make president by this day, or I didn't make my million by this day, or I didn't do that by this day.
Right. And importantly, those things do not cost money. Those are things
exactly
anybody can do if you determine, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, take some determination, maybe some help from a colleague or a peer or a family member.
Exactly. And there's libraries in almost every city and county in America that have books on cognitive therapy that you can check out and teach yourself how to do it. And it's actually something that almost everybody can teach themselves to a certain level. And if you can't do it enough, then hopefully you can try to get in and see a therapist.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much, Mike, for sharing your expertise with us.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Pat.
We've been talking to Dr. Mike Masters, talking a little bit about the psychology of setting and implementing priorities. For all of you listening, thank you for being with us. And I'm Pat Lynch. Have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, brought to you by Business Alignment Strategies. If you would like to learn how you can ensure that your organization's people, programs, and processes are aligned with its goals, contact us at www.businessalignmentstrategies.com.